This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ray Suarez. After a while, you become so used to the structure of a program like this one that you don't even notice it anymore. The guests are the guests, the callers are the callers, and the host is the host. Without thinking about it, you have a notion in your head of what the appropriate role is for all three parts. Out of such notions come our ideas of celebrity and fame and status, but the celebrated person may just be like you, only like you, given a chance to play a different role. Actor, writer, creator of Monster in a Box and Swimming to Cambodia, Spalding Gray is with me here in Washington. His new theater piece is called Interviewing the Audience. It turns the audience from observers into a part of the production. So today we're going to subvert that day-after-day structure you're so used to here at Talk of the Nation. I ask the questions, guests give the answers, you call with your own comments and your own questions. Today, I'm a guest here, really, and so are you. Spalding Gray is the host. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Let me say one last thing before we hand this over to Spalding. Our number in Washington, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Spalding Gray is your host for Interviewing the Audience, and I guess we should put a little bit more meat on the bones and have people understand what you're doing at the Kennedy Center.
I'll know tonight. It's a really wide open program, the interviewing is. I'll hang out in the lobby for a half hour before the audience comes in, and then I intuitively choose people, and I think that's one of the only times that my intuition is fully operative. And ask them if they want to participate in the program, and they'll often say, well, what do you mean participate? And I say, I would take your name and call you up, and you would talk with me. Well, what are you talking about? We came to see you. Well, no, this is called interviewing the audience, and you're the audience. And really, well, I'm not sure that I want to go up there. Well, why not? Well, I choose someone else. Are you really sure? Well, all right, why not? I'll give it a try. So someone like that I would take, you know, because they weren't really extroverted, not exhibitionistic, and they were open enough to play along with it. So the idea being that there is no agenda. I mean, every talk show, and not that is one that exists, often has a theme or agenda. And in this case, it really is about going from the moment that the person sits down across from me on stage and me starting with the first response. It really is not just interviewing. It's interactive conversations with, but I might ask, and I often do, how did you get here tonight? And they'll be, what do you mean? How did you get to the theater? Oh, well, we're starting with something. It's like, well, I was in a car. Well, what kind of car? Well, I'm sorry to say it's a Japanese car. You know, this is what I got in St. Louis. Everyone that came in a Japanese car apologized for some reason. That became the ongoing theme of the evening, because what we're doing certainly in that theater is building a kind of town meeting or collective that isn't being mediated or turned into virtual reality beyond that space. So a kind of, that's a very special moment in the theater. This will be different from that, but I never know each evening. When I'm doing a monologue, I know pretty much what I'm going to say, but in the case of the conversations with the audience, it can really go a lot of places, from a healing piece to sheer entertainment to boredom to real, it's real life, it's real time. And what the audience has to do, and where the work comes in, is they have to do a lot of the framing and editing. And they have to pick out what's interesting for them and stay with it, you know. And I'm getting better at editing, and I'm getting better at easing people off the stage in a polite way. They're not working, but I'm getting fewer and fewer duds. By that I mean fewer and fewer inaccessible people.
So people are, to some degree, self-selecting. If they really do want to talk you out of using them,
Oh, absolutely. You're not raked onto the stage with a big rake. You're not forced to say anything to it. I mean, it certainly is exploring the ideas of rights of privacy, too, because when a question is asked, obviously sometimes you are put on a spot and to say no is to say yes, but you certainly have the choice of how to edit yourself, the person being interviewed, or whether or not they want to deal with the topic at hand or how they want to deal with it. I remember in Cambridge, Massachusetts, years ago when I was doing it, and this piece, by the way, is 1980 was the first time I performed it. So I go in and out with it, when I want to refresh my being able to be more present and listen quality rather than spewing and doing a monologue. Well, it's not really spewing, but doing all the talking. I initiate this piece and bring this in to freshen up my my life again and to hear other people. But I remember years ago in Cambridge, Massachusetts, I asked a woman if she was a married woman, and I asked her if she had any extracurricular love affairs or would sleep with other people. She said, oh, that's, you know, I live here. I'm not going to answer that question. You're leaving tomorrow, you know. Well, in a way, she answered the question, but
would you like to start?
Sure. Oh, you know what I wanted to throw out as a possibility, because just as a format, which I've never done before. For years, I had fantasies of doing a radio show, if I was ever to do one, called The Good News. And that would be that we were counteracting all the bad news with a good news personal story, something that happened in someone's life that made them up, that made them have faith in humanity again, a human interest story. And then I guess canceled the whole idea because I thought, well, people would stop making them up and I would have no way of proving. So we have a possibility here of throwing out a good news anecdote, not too long, be brief with it, try to be a good self-editor. And rather than asking me questions, because I don't feel like an answer man, certainly I can respond, but I'm open to hearing some good news stories and open to the idea that we as listeners, me included, would know the difference between the truth and a lie, which I think is always, or hyperbole, which always is an interesting exercise.
And the people who have called us so far, Spalding, are aware that, and they're ready, and they know that they are going to be asked questions. So it's not like anybody has entered our space under false pretenses. They are ready to play.
Right.
Let's go first to Seattle, Washington. Gloria, welcome to Talk of the Nation with Spalding Gray.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Well, Gloria?
Yeah?
What comes to mind?
About good news?
Yeah.
Well,
First of all, is it raining there?
Oh, yeah.
It is, yeah. You're not depressed
lovely.
By that. It's lovely.
No, I like it.
Yeah, yeah. What's the good news?
Well, I think recently the good news for me was, this is sort of silly, but my cat was brought back from the brink of death by a very good specialist, and we nursed her back to health, and it was really a sort of defining and preoccupying moment of the past month for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you know your cat was ailing?
Well, she was losing weight, and at one very dramatic point one evening, she was unable to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, her legs were dragging behind her, and it was very pathetic.
How old is she?
She's 12.
Yeah. And what was the great healer that brought her back? What was the method that was used?
Well, science and I guess a lot of, you know, care.
Uh-huh.
I guess I never experienced something like that, and I was surprised how much I wanted to suddenly, like, fight for her well-being. I
suppose
it was sort of a selfish impulse, but, you know.
Why would you think of that as selfish?
Well, not wanting to put an animal through, you know, unnecessary pain simply because
uh-huh.
you desire or need them in your life.
Right. Were you praying?
No, not in the way that I was taught to pray when I was a young Catholic girl.
Right, but do you have a new way?
I wouldn't call it prayer, no. I lit a candle the night that she was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of Catholic, isn't it?
I don't know. I haven't been there.
And
what's her condition now?
Very much improved. She looks fine, except she's got a bald head because she had to have a spinal tap.
Whoa.
She looks very strange, but she looks great.
So you're happy again, or happier?
I'm very happy about that, yeah. Yes.
And are you living alone with your cat?
I live with two cats.
Uh-huh. How's the other one?
Oh, fine. She had to be taken away, though, because cats get very upset when the other one is very sick, and she got very hostile.
But has she been able to reintegrate?
Yes, she has.
Right. So they're living a good life together now?
Yes, they're back curled up together and playing and fighting like normal children, so to speak.
Thank you for the good news story.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Gloria, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks.
Let's go next to Seattle again, to Patrick. How are you, Patrick?
Good. Real good.
And is it raining there, Patrick?
This morning it was raining, but I couldn't say right now.
Right. Why not?
Oh, I'm a workspace with no windows to the outside.
What kind of work is that you wouldn't have windows?
I'm in a retail stock area.
Uh-huh. Doing what?
I'm preparing signage for windows.
Uh-huh. And you get to listen to the radio while you're doing that?
I do.
Yeah. That's legal?
Completely legal.
Yeah, yeah. What do you usually listen to?
NPR.
Yeah, right, all day?
For the most part. Or else I bring in tapes, but primarily I listen to NPR.
Right, right.
Tapes and when it's a rebroadcast of a show I heard earlier.
Did you have a particular good news story? I mean, you don't have to, but does one come to mind?
One came to mind when I was listening to previous caller. I have been playing sort of telephone tag with an old friend of mine for months, actually. He's out of town a lot, and he just recently moved. And I called him to tell good news about a mutual friend of ours who got a new job, and he already knew about it. And it turned out that we're going to be in New York together, or we will now, because I called to tell him this story and told him what I was doing, and he's going to rework his schedule so that we can spend a day together.
So
that
you can
good news.
So you can spend a day in New York City.
Right.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
I'm going to be traveling to New York.
Okay.
That's part of the conversation we had as a result of talking about this mutual friend.
Right. Right. And so, what will you do when you're in New York with him? Do you have plans?
He is a costume designer.
Right.
He's doing a show right now, so I'll probably see the show he's doing. It's in previews.
Right, right. So you'll only have one day there?
As far as I know now. Well, together we'll have one day, yeah.
And when was the last time you were in New York City?
I was back east for a cousin's wedding last holiday season, last in 95.
And you spent some time in New York City?
Yes.
And what is your reaction to that place?
Well, it's not love-hate. I love the city.
Right.
I don't know that I could... I would love it if I had an opportunity to have a closed-ended life there, where if I knew I was going to be there for 6 months or,
right.
or 2 years.
But when you think of the whole city, I mean, you don't. When you say you love the city, what do you think of when you think of New York City? What is the image or feeling that you have?
I'm from Seattle, which is... growing and growing, but it's
right.
not a very metropolitan city in comparison to New York.
Right.
And I like the fact that it's full of people, and I like the
right.
fact that you can be in a corner and hear several languages being
yeah.
spoken all at once. And you, I mean, I'm fascinated by the art, so that's a big plus in that city. Is there's really something you can do any time of the day that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you like about Seattle, one thing?
One thing I like about Seattle is its beauty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, as far as the rain, the reason I love the rain, now that I have a garden, I've learned that the rain is why things grow.
Mm-hmm.
So,
when you say the city's beautiful, what do you think of as the city? Because I have a picture of Seattle as a kind of, well, I don't think of it as a city. I think of it as in a beautiful setting, but I don't think of the city itself. I can't see it.
Well, you've performed here.
Yeah, and I never sensed it was a city.
Really?
Yeah.
It's unlike New York, where New York has these definite neighborhoods that are, you know, cheek by jowl. Seattle has definite neighborhoods, but they're separated by long distances compared to
right,
New York.
Right, right. So you have
that's
to get
what gives it a city feeling. Is
yeah.
you
yeah.
you ask someone where they're from in Seattle and.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a clue as to what they're all about.
Right, right. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye, Patrick.
Bye-bye.
If you've just tuned in to Talk of the Nation, no, I haven't been fired. I'm still here. Our host today is Spalding Gray, who's performing at the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C., a recurrent theater piece he calls Interviewing the Audience. And today, you are our guests on Talk of the Nation, being interviewed and telling your good news stories to Spalding Gray. The number is 800-989-8255. And we'll go next to Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi,
Kathy. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good.
How are you doing?
Pretty well.
Yeah? Where are you?
I'm in my kitchen.
Uh-huh. Are you taking the day off?
Oh, no. I get to work at 5 a.m., so I get out around 1.
What do you do?
I work on a receiving dock in a department store.
Oh, boy. No windows there.
Oh, yeah, we have three big doors we can look out.
And it's dark.
Dark?
Outside.
It's a little cloudy, but it's not dark.
No, when you're working.
Oh, when I get to work, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking out of your window in the kitchen or not?
Yes.
You are? You're standing up?
No, I'm sitting down.
At a table?
No, at the counter on a stool.
Right. And what are you thinking about?
Well, I was listening mm-hmm. to everything that was going on.
And therefore you were reacting?
Yes.
Yes, and what were some of your reactions?
I was surprised that the gentleman before me also worked in a department store.
Right. Maybe there's a lot of that going on.
Well, it's...
Do you allow to have the radio on there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you do that?
Oh, yeah.
What do you listen to?
Well, there's a lot of people that I work with, so we all take turns.
Uh-huh.
Mostly, they like to listen to rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. Do you like your job?
I do like my job, yes.
Why?
Something new every day.
Yeah, as in product?
Oh, product, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And what would you rather be doing?
What would I rather be doing? Oh, gosh. Traveling.
Where?
Oh, to start, probably to city, Chicago.
To Chicago?
Yeah.
Now, let's see, how far would that be from Lansing?
It's 4 hours from here, driving.
And what was the last trip that you took?
The last trip that I took, last September to Syracuse.
Really? And Chicago would be your first choice?
Yeah.
What would draw you to Chicago? You have what?
A sister in Chicago.
Oh, so you would go to see someone that you knew and loved rather than a landscape that you didn't know?
Well, if I had the opportunity to travel, I think I'd go see someone that I knew first.
Right, right. And then second?
Second, I'd like to go to Ireland.
Yeah. Good choice. That's the only country I would really keep going back to that I visited. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to ask me?
Oh.
Or tell me?
Well, gosh.
Are you blank now?
Well, I can think of all kinds of little things that don't seem to mean much.
Uh-huh.
I like your work.
Mm-hmm. But about from your own life, what's going on? Are you living alone?
Right now, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm separated.
Right. How's that?
It's different.
Mm-hmm. Were you with someone for a long time?
I'm married, separated.
Mm-hmm. Do you have many of your friends that are married and separated?
No. The ones that are married
Right. So you're the odd one in that sense.
I'm the odd one, yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting used to that.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Right. What are you able to be alone?
Yes.
And how do you do that?
How am I able to be alone?
You just are.
Pardon me?
You just are. I mean, you're able to do it all right.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like work.
No. I was alone a lot before I was actually separated, so...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's something I'm used to. I don't think of it, I don't know, I just don't consider it as being alone. I guess I am, but...
But you are able to talk with yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a relationship with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's going all right.
Yeah, so far.
Well, I wish you well.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kathy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sherry is next. She's in San Francisco, California.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Is it raining there?
No, it's not raining.
What is it like?
Foggy, but it lifted.
It lifted, which means the sun is out.
What's that?
The sun is out.
The sun is out,
and
yeah.
And you're not out.
I'm not out. I'm in.
How do you resist?
Skylight.
Oh, you have the skylight.
Yeah.
That was always my... I'm very much in love with the Bay Area and keep gravitating back to it.
Yeah.
And it always causes a great mania in me.
Uh-huh.
And I often wondered if I lived there long enough, if I could finally master the art of staying indoors and being more internal and East Coast. But every time the sun comes out there, I can't, I just go out and wander.
So you think it's important to be internal in East Coast?
Not important, but it's certainly a rhythm that I've grown up with and would miss very much. Where are you from?
I'm from California, but I've lived in other colder places. I've lived in Hamburg and I've lived in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep coming back here because I miss that what you just described.
Right.
I like being by the ocean.
Yeah. Do you have any good news stories today?
I have one that occurred to me. It's a couple years old.
Uh-huh.
If that doesn't matter.
No.
It's just about how my friend Isabel saw me through something.
Uh-huh.
Sort of difficult. I was traveling in Yugoslavia and hadn't really prepared to sleep outside, but ended up sleeping outside in a park in Belgrade one night.
Mm-hmm.
And got bit by a mosquito there, and I'm allergic to that, and it got very bad, and because the bite was by my eye, I decided not to travel with it, but to stay and see if it could be cured there. And so
when you say cured.
Cured.
Yeah. What would have to be cured? What was the reaction?
Well, the mosquito bit. They bit me sort of everywhere.
Wait, is it?
I don't know what they did.
You said he. You know,
the mosquito. I'm sorry?
You said the mosquito was a he.
Yeah. Oh, a she. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's right.
She.
Yeah.
They didn't bite my friend Sebastian, but they bit me a lot.
Uh huh.
And
but isn't that often the case when
you
find when you're traveling with a man that the women are the bait for the mosquitoes, the female mosquitoes?
Yeah, I smell better. I think.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, he had to be somewhere on a certain date. So I said, look, you take the train. Go ahead. I don't want to keep you. I don't know how long this will take because my left eye was completely swollen shut. Hmm. And what happened then was I was sent from sort of clinic to pharmacy to hospital, you know, and getting all this runaround. And quite miraculously, in the middle of it, a friend who I had never expected to see there recognized me by my yellow skirt and, you know, said, Sherry, my God. And
Sherry, do you always wear that yellow skirt? I mean,
well, I don't anymore.
Right, but it was famous.
I was traveling just then and I had this bright yellow pleated skirt.
And she had seen it before.
Yeah. And it's very, you know, easy to sleep on trains and stuff like that, wearing this certain skirt and a pair of overalls. And, anyway, she recognized me by my skirt, and because of that, I...
You mean she wouldn't have recognized you because you were that swollen? I mean, she had to look down at the skirt?
I think she saw the skirt from
a
distance. Like, she was having a beer somewhere or something, and she saw this yellow skirt,
saw
that it was me, and I hope I'm not boring everybody who's listening.
Oh, don't ask that question, please.
Oh,
that's the first way into it.
Oh, good, I made him laugh.
No one even thought about that till you brought it up, and now we're ready to go to sleep.
Anyway, we're telling it in kind of a convoluted way, but what happened was I went to hospital for some treatment for the mosquito bite. They gave me a shot and then discovered that I didn't have enough money. I wouldn't let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And kept me there in the emergency room, but my friend Isabel tracked me down and stayed with me, and when I woke up in the emergency room, she was there beside me, and I called the consulate. This all happened on a Sunday, so I called the consulate on Monday, who then got me out of there, and through them I contacted my brother in Fallbrook, who was good enough to wire some money to Belgrade to pay my hospital bills so I could leave.
Listen,
Sherry's in San Francisco, and Spalding Gray's handling the interviewing this hour. We're going to take a short break and be back with a lot more interviews and your calls. At half past the hour, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're back with Talk of the Nation. I'm Ray Suarez. Tune in at this time tomorrow for a discussion of a new study on television violence. The latest findings provide the strongest evidence yet that there is a correlation between the violence we see and the violence in our society. We'll talk with experts about the implications of the study and what it means for the future of TV programming. This hour, my guest is actor, writer, performance artist Spalding Gray, who is, as a matter of fact, really conducting the interviews here today. He's performing at the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C., in a recurring theater piece called Interviewing the Audience. To join the conversation, please give us a call at 800-989-8255. Well, does the conceit transfer from the stage to the telephone, Spalding?
I'm not sure what you mean by conceit. You know, it's completely different on the radio, and I'm just starting to figure it out and how to do it, and I think it's a nice difference. But the thing that's happening always on stage is prana. And prana, I guess I define as aura or life force, but the heat comes off a body when a body's present. Mm. That is only contained in a voice, and certainly radio has that mystique to it. I was, when I came in here to the National Public Radio studios, I was early enough to go look at all the pictures of all of the voices, and that's always a treat, because that's an unknown. The face is an unknown, and of course people project that or make that up. I think they visualize a face and a voice, and in radio they're really quite different.
Let's hope it wasn't a letdown.
It was a difference.
Yeah, sure, sure. Well, you ready to head back to the phones?
Sure.
Let's go to Anchorage, Alaska. Rob has been standing by. Rob, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Rob.
Hello, Spalding.
What's happening? What's happening in Anchorage?
Well, right now we're having snow, and it's just lovely. I can look out in my backyard, where I've got a couple of bird feeders.
Right.
And there's some chickadees sitting on them right now, sort of diving through the snow at the top and attacking the thistles from the sides.
And you're not working?
No, I'm out of work right now.
Uh-huh. Which means?
Which means I'm, to an extent, looking. But
right.
Today's my birthday.
Oh.
And I'm relaxing and cleaning the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And when I heard you were going to be on, I called in.
How old are you today?
42.
Good, I guess. How does that feel?
Oh, it's just another circuit around the sun, but I have to tell you, it feels real good.
And are you going to celebrate?
Just quietly. I'm a quiet type of person. Mm-hmm. Most of my relatives are on the East Coast.
Right. So it means you'll stay in tonight?
Oh, no. No, I'll probably go out and check out the ski trails.
Uh-huh. At night?
Yes, we have some lighted ski trails, and starting with this weekend, they should be really nice to be on.
Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking about?
I guess I'm thinking of the duality of things. I'm pretty philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy thinking about just existence, but I also like little things. I'm
right.
the kind of guy, if I'm out in the spring, I can look down at a blade of grass, but I can also look up at the sky, and I can just wonder about either of them.
Are you paying any attention to what's going on in the political arena in the United States now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah? What kind
of... I'm kind of enjoying it, because most things that happen have happened before, and
mm-hmm.
I think America is pretty much the way it's always been, with a few technological changes.
Right. So what do you see happening now that's a repetition of a few years ago?
Oh, I'd say political campaigns and people always saying how things are getting worse. But
mm-hmm.
if you look back in history, you say that you see that people were saying that 100 years ago with industrialization, or even before that.
What's the sense in your own life about things getting worse or better? Do you feel a great sense of entropy or evolution?
I kind
of or evolutionary entropy.
I think we're in a battle with entropy, and that is kind of how you can define life.
Right.
And it's almost like. Well, what was the belief of the Götterdämmerung, the twilight of the gods? You can interpret that as the ultimate winning of entropy sometime in a distant future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I start thinking, if you think on a birthday, you can think about, well, one of my favorite concepts that I thought to mention to you would be that, how you always hear that the human mind can't encompass infinity?
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I think it's just the reverse, that infinity is a human concept and it doesn't have any meaning outside of the human mind.
At times, I think that about everything, most of the time.
Uh-huh.
That it's all, well, there's a wonderful book called The Five-Pound Universe, which is essays on the five-pound universe, which is the human brain, right?
Uh-huh.
Where it's all contained in there, the whole, we're not looking out, we're looking in.
Well, can I get on to an actual story? That
mm-hmm, please.
Because I also like to look at individual things. The year, even though I've been out of work, the year got off to a really nice start. My brother came up from California, where it was like 70 degrees, and at the time we had very little snow, and it was minus 10 degrees. And I kind of enjoyed the fact that he wanted that kind of challenge. He specifically wanted to come up and visit in the winter when it was nice and dark. And so we went out. The fact that I had a visitor here was almost as good as going traveling myself, which I love to do. So he came up here, and we got out almost every day, and we'd go out in this, you know, these temperatures where if you have any kind of problem, it can become serious quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I just made sure that we didn't. You know, we had tons of clothes, and even though my car isn't in the best of health, I did everything I could for it. I always told him what we were going to be doing and where we'd be going and what our alternatives were if things went wrong. And he would just look at me and say, "Are we nuts?" And I'd say, "Probably." And I really enjoyed that. He was up here for a week and a half, and we had a pretty good time. And then right after he left, I got work for a week, which was also really nice.
What do you remember, any particularly high moment of that visit?
Well, I'd say when we had friends over. Unfortunately, as I age, my married friends are having kids, and
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing kind of a demarcation in our lives,
which is
to be expected. And so we just had a big dinner at the house and had a bunch of them over with lots of squalling kids. That was kind of nice. I'd say that's a high point for me.
Right. Thank you for calling, Rob.
Thanks for being there.
Happy birthday, Rob.
Yes.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Crestone, Colorado is next. Grant, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Ooh. Jeez. Hi, Grant.
Hi.
What's happening?
What's happening? Well, I'm in Crestone, Colorado, where the weather is about 50 degrees and there's snow on the ground. And I'm working with a project to write some workshops because I just got some partner teachers.
Workshops in
expanding human potential.
I'm trying to visualize what that would be.
Well, normally my work is personal one-on-one sessions where a person comes in and it looks like they're going to have a massage, but I sort of look into their body and...
Wait, slow down.
Yeah.
Look into their body?
Yeah, well, it's not a looking with the eye. It's looking with a feeling, sort of like when you were talking about prana.
Right.
And you feel what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I do is I get as empty as I can when I work with someone, and I let their body tell me what it wants to do rather than what they think they need.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that 16 years, and I'm just a little worn out because mm-hmm. it takes a very extreme personal involvement.
Right.
And
right.
Teaching workshops is... You know, like working with four people in one day is like teaching 20 people in an 8-hour workshop.
Teaching people how to do what you do?
No, working with people, opening up doors, shifting paradigms, giving them the insight that there's a lot inside that they're not even touching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it looks a lot like everything from an outdoor climbing experience to where you're challenged to go further because you want to get to the top, and yet it's comfortable enough to be inside where it's someone else's turn to go and you can process through their going.
Right, right. And what's happened?
What's happened when?
With it, when you do that.
Oh, what happens?
Yeah.
What happens is, people start to view that they're holding themselves back, that no one's really holding them back,
mm-hmm.
and that their spouse or their sister or whoever they're the closest with is not their afflictor. It's more like they are choosing to let that person hold them back.
Back from what, though?
Back from going forward to greater potential possibilities. I know it sounds a little vague, but let's just say that somebody has been living at home as a housewife forever and all of a sudden realized that they could be out sharing their art or getting involved with planting trees or teaching school or, you know, like people think that they have limitations placed upon them by others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true.
Oh, no, that's true as well, don't you think?
Even if you're in prison, you can do a lot of mind expanding.
Right, but you do admit that there are limitations placed on us by others as well.
It's apparent that that's so, and it also looks like it's partially choice. I mean, like the people right. who are starving in India, you know, it's like, look where they're living, you know, like they could make a goal to get out of a place that's so barren.
Have you been to India?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Where did you go?
It was all the way back. At this moment, you just spaced me out. I just lost it.
You don't remember where you went in India?
Were
you taking a lot of drugs?
Bangkok.
No, Thailand.
You see what I mean? I just got back from Thailand and London, and
right.
and I haven't been there for...
It sounds like India burned you out. I know it did me when I was there, but I was unclear on one thing, and I knew that the people in the streets of Calcutta did not have any way of getting off those streets.
Right.
That was clear to me.
Right. That is a very polluted area.
Right. But there were very happy families on the street.
Right.
They were still very together.
Right.
Now, who do you have, anyone holding you back?
No.
You're completely, you can go for it then.
I'm holding me back.
Right.
My own fears of taking another step.
Right.
It's my own fears of failing, my own fears of intimacy.
Right.
You know, it's like I'm real good at intimacy with clients.
Right, I know the experience.
They paid or done, they go.
Right.
And when it comes into a personal life,
then
you have to deal with them.
Yeah,
And your own stuff that comes up.
Yep. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Bye, Grant.
Bye.
In case you're just joining us, this is Talk of the Nation on NPR, and Spalding Gray is with us in the studio. His piece, Interviewing the Audience, is currently running at the Kennedy Center, and today I'm, like you, a listener, and Spalding's doing a lot of the heavy lifting. How's it going?
Oh, all right. I could do one more, but I also want to interview you, Ray, because you're sitting across from me. And it's a perfect setup. That's the way I usually do it. This is triangulated.
Well, we have several choices here. Why don't I leave this next one up to you?
We've done Seattle a lot. I'm torn between Idaho and New Jersey. I'm going to go for Idaho because I was there for Christmas and was stunned by it.
Sun Valley, Idaho. Sabine, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, Sabine.
Thanks for choosing me.
Are you skiing there?
No, actually, right now I'm lying in bed.
Uh-huh. Why?
Well, I'm coming here as a kind of convalescing vacation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been ill for a couple of years.
Right. Are you getting better?
In different ways. Mm-hmm. I seem to be able to find better ways to cope with the illness so that I can have a better quality of life, but I'm not really sure if physiologically I'm getting much better. It's
right.
very tricky.
Right. Do you have any good reports?
I do, yeah. I actually called about a birthday, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the worst birthdays as far as I can remember, and I decided to come out here to visit my dad and his girlfriend around the time of my 25th birthday so that I can sort of turn it over to them to make it good
mm-hmm.
instead of wringing my hands about what I'm going to do to make my birthday be decent. And it was wonderful. It was, it had been, since you were in Idaho, I'm sure you remember how the sky, when it's overcast, the sky is the same color as the snow,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a total whiteout.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been that way for all week. And then on the day of my birthday, the clouds parted. It was just like a movie, the clouds parted. And it was sunny, and the snow started melting, and at night it was the full moon. And the moonlight exposed more details in all the ridges of the mountains than the daylight did, because it was so bright in the day and whited out, and the moonlight, it was just exquisite. It
was when was your birthday?
It was on Saturday, February 3rd.
How old were you?
25.
Well, sounds like a beautiful one.
Yeah, it was great.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Sabine.
What do we have? What? Right, I can't tell which clock is which.
Well,
it's like a taxi cab in here suddenly looking up at these digital things.
Why don't we talk to one more person before the break, and then
we have a break.
You and I can talk for the rest of the program.
Fine.
At that point. Where would you like to go? We've got Virginia, Washington, and Missouri waiting.
St. Louis.
St. Louis. Cedric. There you are, Cedric.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
Great.
Interesting name. Where did that come from, Cedric?
Cedric. From what I understand, I really don't know. Someone told me it was British. Then someone said my last name was British as well.
When you say someone?
Different people.
Yeah, different people like what? In the streets or?
School teachers who've heard my name.
Right.
Other educators, relatives. Because I really don't know.
But how about, are your parents living?
Pardon me, yes. Yes, they are.
But would they know?
Well, my mother's living.
Mm-hmm. Would she know?
I never asked.
Mm-hmm.
It never concerned me until someone else would say, huh, interesting name.
Right.
That probably comes from, and, you know, it's never been anything that I've been concerned about.
Right. What is your last name?
Benbow.
What is it?
Benbow.
How do you spell that?
Benbow. Like Admiral Benbow?
All right. Now, you know, if you wanted to check on your name, there's a wonderful book called Naming Your Baby.
Correct.
And your name might be in there, and then it tells that, you know, the derivation of it. They have Spalding in there, and Spalding is Old English for a meadow cleft by a stream.
Right. Now I have a company out of Ohio who researches name, who sends me a book called The Book of Benbows Throughout the World.
Sounds great.
And it was interesting because I see all these Benbows, but I found that most of the Benbows in the United States are on the West Coast, and outside of the United States, they are in Britain.
Uh-huh. Well, there you are in St. Louis, and you're the only one.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, everyone that's in the phone book here in St. Louis is a relative of mine.
Okay, so you have a lot of relatives.
Not very many. It's only like, well, my name's in there three times.
Now, what? Why?
Well, because I have an office at my mother's house, and that name, and then my mother's name, my mother's phone is in my name. Because I pay her bill for her, and my home, that phone is in my name.
Mm-hmm. What do you do for work? Are you working now?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur,
but I'm
also a prevention specialist for the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse.
Right. Entrepreneur, what is that?
Well, entrepreneur, it would be a person who spends money to make money, take risks to make money.
And where do you get the money to do that?
Actually, I take it out of my paycheck, and I use the money that I make from my entrepreneur endeavors.
I see. How are you doing at that?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing, well, I would say, well, some people probably would, you know, say, well, he's doing okay, but my lifestyle doesn't require me to make a lot of money because I live very modestly, and I do things in moderation, so I don't need a lot of money to live.
What's your favorite way of letting loose and celebrating when the time comes?
Oh, letting loose and celebrating, turning on some I guess, real good jazz music, getting into some real good jazz, probably going out to dinner. I don't do a lot of real loose celebrating.
Right, right. Well, did you have any quick good news story or not?
Yes, I do. I have a very good news story.
Yeah.
It just happened maybe a half hour ago.
Great. Very contemporary.
I was on my way here to my office, and a car was coming towards me head on, and it just stopped right in the middle of the intersection. And as I went around the car, it was an old lady, maybe about 90 years old, and I was concerned about her. And she sat there for a while, and then she began to drive again, but I see she was having a problem. I made a U-turn. I parked my car. I got out and asked her what she was having a problem. She said she was, that she just left the doctor's office, and her eyes were, she just left the eye doctor, and her eyes were bothering her. She couldn't see very well.
Mm-hmm.
I parked my car. I asked her, you know, if it would be okay if I take her home. I took her home. She didn't live but a few minutes from where I live. I took her home, put the car in the garage, made sure she got in the house, but I didn't have any money to catch a cab back to my car. She offered to give me $4 to catch a cab. I took the $4. I got the cab, got back to my car, and made it back to my office.
Beautiful.
But it made me feel very good. But
yeah.
I also care, and that's one of the things that I hear people talk about, the elderly, that you have to be watch out for the elderly.
Right.
And that probably what just happened has probably brought me, made me more aware of how important that is.
Beauty, that's very nice. Thank you.
Cedric,
thank you.
Thanks
uh-huh.
for your call.
Thank you.
Spalding Gray is with me here in Washington, interviewing the audience. I'm Ray Suarez. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Well, is it my turn?
Oh, yeah, you're not going to... I thought you were taking another news break. First thing I'm curious about, how long have you been doing the show?
In April, it'll be 3 years.
Right. And you're researching all of the people that you're working with here.
Right.
Do you have someone working for you on that? I mean,
The staff helps identify places that I can go to get the things I need to know before a particular show. So, for instance, earlier today, former Senator Mitchell, who's been working on Northern Ireland, was on the program. The people who work with me to put Talk of the Nation on the air will get me articles and Xeroxes and Nexus searches and things like that, and I'll have the material I need to sort of be up to speed for our day's show.
Do you live in the city? Do you live in Washington?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Where?
Up in the northwest side, not too far from the Maryland border. It's a sort of transitional neighborhood between the city and the suburbs.
And where did you grow up?
In Brooklyn.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, when did you leave Brooklyn?
I left Brooklyn after I finished college.
Which was what year?
In the late 70s, 1978.
Yeah, yeah. And went where?
And first I went to London. Then I came back to New York. And I went to Rome. And then came back to New York. And then went to California.
What would make you do all those things?
The news business. It's a
right.
gypsy business.
That,
you know,
that's what you were doing then,
all
this time,
all that
after
time.
College.
Mm-hmm.
What end of the news were you working on?
I was at different times in my life a radio reporter, a radio producer, a newspaper writer, a magazine writer, and for a long time a television reporter.
I've always been curious about news people, about how they process the information. Like, you do this show every day,
mm-hmm.
and every day there's this enormously diverse topics coming up and information. Are you assimilating it? Does it go through you and get on to the next thing? I mean, it's like when I think about therapists working with patients, it's that kind of, how do you shift from story to story without it? Does it leave traces in you?
Well,
were you dreaming about it or dwelling on
it? It's almost like you have different types of memory. There are things that you already know in advance that you have to know for good.
Right.
And there are things that you know that you can almost do the computer equivalent of pushing a button that mm-hmm. says dump files.
Mm-hmm.
And after you finish a show on a particular topic,
right.
it stays in very short-term memory and then just gets rinsed
yeah.
away.
But do you find things that haunt you? I mean, that stay in there and don't get rinsed away, so that they're influencing your non-news life? Or is there a non-news life?
Oh, well, especially when I was a street reporter.
Right.
The things that I saw... and the things that I watched people go through mm-hmm. left a very strong residue. And whenever you do anything that had something to do with that part of human life, that other experience you had would always come back,
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm. So how would you, when you're doing street reporting or even now, make downtime? I mean, do you listen or watch the news? How do you relate to the news outside of your own?
Well, it's hard being a news junkie because
yeah.
if you wanted to, you could turn your life into a never-ending
right.
input,
right.
you know, where you're constantly
right.
listening to the radio, reading
yeah.
a newspaper, watching
yeah.
television.
Yeah.
So you have to actually force yourself to say, you know, I'm just going to leave that. And you have to tear
mm-hmm.
your head away from
mm-hmm.
it, in a
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, recently I was in Baton Rouge because I'm working on filming my new monologue with Steven Soderbergh down there. And it was a very isolated experience, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I was watching daytime television and I was watching CNN. And in 2 hours, CNN probably gives you three stories: how cold it is in America, the flat tax, Forbes speaking, and whether or not Timothy McVeigh will be tried in Oklahoma City. And you think, well, you know, where is the rest of the news? And then I thought, well, who is doing that? And then I realized, back to the great NPR and how that, you know, how All Things Considered and your show and also the Sunday show and Morning Edition, gives the kind of human interest stories juxtaposed with national news, which is a rare thing.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being here, and I hope that you had a good time sort of transferring your concept to the radio and working with my audience.
I had a good time. I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
Spalding Gray is an actor, writer, performance artist, and monologist. His latest show is called Interviewing the Audience, which he's performing at the Kennedy Center in Washington until the 10th of this month. The new monologue is called It's a Slippery Slope, and he'll be performing that piece at theaters across America in the coming year. In Washington, along with Spalding Gray, I'm Ray Suarez.